I was stopped at Chapters. I don't know if any of you ever go there. This is a bookstore. Mm-hmm. And I found this book that was there.
The Self-Illusion.
Mm-hmm. And is it ever interesting? Huh. It says, the self-illusion is about the science of self, the truth behind the illusion that we all share, that we exist as individuals inside our bodies and are in control of our own thoughts and behaviors. Recent developments in neuroscience tell us that we consist of a multitude of unconscious mechanisms interpreting the world, yet we are largely under the influence of those around us. We are not the individuals we think we are. The truth that our self is a narrative our brain creates. And he actually talks about illusion, and illusion doesn't mean it's not there. It means that it's neither there nor not there. Mm-hmm. He actually uses the Buddhist definition of illusion. Mm-hmm. That's why they say it's ineffable, beyond description. Isn't it lovely, eh? The truth that our self is a narrative our brain creates may startle those of us who fervently believe that we are in full of control of who we are and what we do, excepting Jack, of course.
Full control.
Bruce Hood, a world-renowned expert on the brain, reaches deep into our evolutionary past to find out what makes us tick. He reveals fascinating original research about child development and ultimately takes us inside our own heads to explain how and why we act the way we do. Mm-hmm. The self-illusion is a highly accessible, often entertaining, and ultimately provocative book about the nature of you, yourself, and I. Hi. Isn't that lovely?
Yeah.
And he actually talks about two people who had said this. One is the Buddha and the other is the philosopher Hume. Interesting, eh?
No.
There's a chair up here if you want.
Yes, I'm looking for
a pen.
What did the Buddha and the philosopher Hume say?
And this book that I bought at Chapters on my way up here,
yes,
called The Self-Illusion, it talks about that there isn't any fixed identity, and it describes it in terms of neuroscience and in terms of, did you know that when you're looking at something, there's a space about the size of a lemon off to your center that you don't see, but your brain fills it in? Isn't that interesting? I didn't know that until I read the first chapter.
What does it fill it in with?
Whatever memory. You look at her and you know, oh, I know her from somewhere. And then all these images of the past come up. But when we look at something out there, we're not seeing it out there. You've heard me say this thousands of times, haven't you? Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
From that video on the site, that the eye takes data in, little pixels and doodads, and feeds it to the brain, and the brain does a word search and says, oh, that's such and such. That's a tonka, green tara. But it's not out there that I'm seeing it. It's not that it isn't out there. It's not that it is out there. Curious, isn't it? Our patterns come up. What we've seen in the past, then we assume is out there. But you know that a dog senses differently than you if you've ever taken a dog for a walk. Any of you ever taken a dog for a walk? And what happens when you take a dog for a walk and you walk past a hedge?
Or he lifts his leg up.
First he sniffs and then he lifts his leg up. I'm leaving mine here. Yeah.
Not here, not here.
So his brain is like going, like ours does with sight, his goes with smell. And some beings, it's touch. So who's right? Everybody. So who's wrong? Nobody. So who's accurately perceiving? Oh, none of us. So who's perceiving our perceptions? All of us. So David Bohm, reality is the thing you think about. Okay, I'm finished going blah, blah, blah about this book I just bought. I'm really excited about it, so, you know, I'll pass it around later.
What was the name of the book?
It's called The Self-Illusion. And it's by a guy named Bruce Hood, who apparently has written more than one book, all of which are worth reading. Neat, eh?
Yeah.
It's disgusting, though, isn't it, Pat? I'm not sure I'm willing to give up on myself. Whoever the I is, who isn't sure. Then there's another I who's really grateful to. Hmm. Like when you're playing with Olivia.
Yeah.
Let her take over.
For sure.
Yeah. And then there's another I that doesn't care either way because you just want to go back to sleep. And then there's another I, depending on the circumstance and the memories, this eye comes up, this way, this eye. So the deities, they wear these either freshly severed heads or skulls. 50. For the 50 mind states that they talk about. And that, for them, it's an adornment. They know that none of them is a fixed identity. But they're capable of, out of compassion, to use this one or that one, depending on the circumstance. So anger is a mind state that they get to decide to use when they see their grandchild rush out into the traffic. Get off the road! Caught her just in time. But not when somebody irritates them.
Yeah.
When somebody irritates them, they can change that anger into focus. And they can start looking at how interesting the curves in their ears are. Switch their focus from being irritated to something that interests them. It's a choice. The only person that has the power to make you angry is you. But we don't like to believe that, do we? There's always something out there. Wouldn't that be nice? Then I'm right and they're all in hell. Damn, these are beautiful. Yeah. So, Namo Tassa Bhagavato Arahato Samma Sambuddhassa. Namo Tassa Bhagavato Arahato Samma Sambuddhassa. Namo Tassa Bhagavato Arahato Samma Sambuddhassa. So we seem to be talking about the Eightfold Path. Is that true? And we seem to have gotten to the third one, didn't we? Did we do the third one last time? Did we do the third one last time? Right through, right thought, right speech?
Right speech, we started.
Oh, we started it only? Yeah. Oh, disgusting.
We sort of mentioned it. We kept reviewing.
Oh, yeah, right view, right thought. Yeah.
Yeah.
And that's what you were asking me.
Yeah,
are we going to get to the fourth one? So he asked me when we're getting in the car, are we going to get to the next one tonight? Maybe. So what's right view? or right understanding, which I prefer.
Everything is impermanent. Changing.
Well, that's true, that everything is impermanent and changing. And that's half of one of the... There's two levels of right view. One is called the transcendent and the other is called the temporal or relative. So they say that right view is... For the temporal is when you hear something from others. Does that sound familiar now? You getting it? You hear something from it. Your mom tells you, no, you can't pick your nose at the table. You know, and then enough times you hear it from others, and you start picking your nose at the table, and then you. So it's when, or when you actually realize that you don't want to pick your nose at the table because the boogers stick to your peas when you pick them up. So that comes from inside you. So there's two types of relative view. One is hearing it from others when you're told something. Not necessarily all the commercials. Maybe like the skill with which they put them together, but you don't necessarily have to believe them. But the other one is when you have the insight yourself. I mentioned many times about my sordid past and how one time I had slept with a man who was a real pig, and I left early. And I'm walking toward where I was staying, and I'm walking up the hill, and it just struck me, I don't want to ever do that again. And that was like getting it deeply, not just being told, why do you like being raped? You don't, you know? But like coming from my own heart, I don't want to do that again. And I didn't. Sometimes we obey what we're told, but there's a sort of a, like, either wanting to please others or just going along with it because it's the easy way and keeping our own secret life going. Is that true? Mm-hmm. But eventually, if that seed is planted enough, one time it will get watered by every time we remember it. That suddenly that inner insight will arise. That's called right view, a right understanding, and a relative term. The absolute term is sort of like the Four Noble Truths. So there is dissatisfactoriness. And in a way, I can see how change could be interpreted as dissatisfactoriness. Can you? Mm-hmm. Because every time you think you're about to get something, then the next moment comes. You got it, and then there's a new one on the market. Especially in our market. But you never can be satisfied. There's always this becoming, becoming, becoming. So the whole thing about change can sort of fit in there, but not exactly. There is a cause for suffering. What is the cause for suffering?
Wishing for something other than what is present.
Wishing to be away from what is present.
Wishing to hold on to what is present.
Yeah. Those are the three. And all three of them have also a tad of ignorance in them. Because you're ignoring change. Mm. Is that true? Mm. That there isn't even a self from moment to moment, as this book so nicely describes. There is an end to suffering. It's the third of the Four Noble Truths. Is that possible, to the end of dissatisfactoriness? Isn't that an interesting idea? Isn't that just an interesting idea? Where there is no longer any sense of not wanting to be totally here. Wouldn't that be interesting? Regardless of the outer circumstance. And the fourth one, there is a way to the end of dissatisfactoriness, the Eightfold Path. Which is, the first one is right view or right understand, which points to the fact that the way is won by traversing the path over and over. The thing that's interesting about the Eightfold Path is there isn't a first and a last. It's a wheel. Right wisdom feeds into, which is the last of the Eightfold Path, feeds into right view, which feeds into right thought, which is the second one, which feeds into right speech, which is the third one. They are wheel until one time there is suddenly an insight that takes oneself beyond subject-object duality. And that's the end of suffering. There's long, so long as there's an I, there's something I don't have. So long as I'm looking at this, I don't see the little blind spot that my eyeballs make. My brain fills it in.
They proved it scientifically now, eh?
Interesting, huh? So there are two levels of right view. Hearing from others and knowing for oneself. Is relative. Absolute Four Noble Truths. Is that good? I'm doing another summary. I'm so repetitive.
Thank you.
Right thought. What do you remember about right thought? Right thought has four kinds too. The aspiration to cease to do evil, to cease to act in unwholesome ways. The aspiration has to come, doesn't it? Before you actually catch yourself when you're in the middle of a rant, or you're about to rant, or you're in the middle of a turn off, or you're about to turn off. Aspiration comes. Wait a minute. Have I done this before? Is there anything familiar about this? I'd really like to not keep repeating this pattern. I really would like to. As my beloved teacher, Namgyal Rinpoche, said, if you're not going to do it for yourself, at least think of the poor fool who has to get off the horse when you get on the horse when you get off. Think of the next moment, whichever self is going to come up, and they still have to learn what they don't want to do. Whether it's another lifetime or this lifetime, another circumstance. Weren't we lucky to have somebody like that come into our lives somehow or other? How fortunate. Whether we met him or not, it doesn't matter. You still feel him through all the different people that studied with him, can't you? Mm-hmm. I can. aspiration to cease to do evil, the aspiration to learn to do good. Why? All beings desire pleasure. The greatest pleasure is altruism. You know that when you actually give to somebody else, something goes flutter, flutter in your heart bone. And then it's going, The aspiration to purify the mind. Purify the mind of what? Right and wrong. If I'm right, you're all in hell. If you're right, I'm in hell. Is that true? If I'm right, that what does that leave everybody else? Doesn't it? If I'm wrong, somebody's better than me. Purify the mind of duality. See every moment as the first moment. Every moment as the first moment. Allow the memories to come up, but also know that they're going to show you what you already know and look for what you don't know. Be open to unknowing. What a concept in our day and age. It just ain't what you see in the commercials. Is it? Goodness, no. And then the fourth one, of right thought, this, just being in the moment, this, thusness, is the teaching of all the Buddhas. So again, they are like a learning curve. All of it is a learning curve until the lightning hits. And like the Buddha said, I have found you, O builder. You shall build no more. The building is destroyed. Cast down is the ridgepole. The rafters are broken. For this there is no more becoming. Next moment I'm going to get it. Next moment. Next, no continuous thirst. Total joy in the moment. It's a beyond concept, isn't it? It's even better than going shopping. Any questions, answers, comments, or complaints yet? So what's the first one?
Aspiration to cease to do evil.
Pardon?
Aspiration to cease to do evil.
That's right thought. That's not right view. Right view. What's the first? What's right view?
Right understanding.
Which is?
There's no fixed identity.
There are two levels.
Doing something because you're told. I've heard it from outside, or doing it because you realized it.
Yeah, exactly. And the second, the
Four Noble Truths.
Transcendent,
huh? Four Noble Truths.
The Four Noble Truths, exactly. Did you remember that?
Between us all,
we remember it.
Thank God for us all.
Whoever God knew.
Whoever God knew.
It's the right thought.
Aspiration
to cease to do evil. Second one?
The aspiration to learn to do good.
Yeah. Third one? The aspiration of purifying the mind from good and evil, right and wrong, good and bad, dichotomies, so that because they're all based on the past projected into the present, which actually you consider to be the future, what you're about to become. It's not just being present. And then the last one, this thusness, this is the teaching of the Buddhas. Should I ask you again, or do you remember them now? Good thing it's being taped, eh? So the third one, right speech. So the first of the right speech is the opposite of slander. To not practice slandering. You know what slander is, don't you? Slander?
Talk
means, yeah, say nasty things about others. Slandering somebody's name is kind of like spreading mud on their windows.
Even if you think it's out of fun?
Then you're not doing it for slander, you're doing it for humor. But the motive, if the motive is to cause harm, it's not good. It's the motive that matters. You could slander me by saying, when am I going to get to the next of the Eightfold Path, because I keep repeating the first three.
It's obviously a spiral.
See? You can slander me. But you could be joking, or you could mean it. Uh-huh. There's a difference. So if you're joking, it's not slander. It's the motive that matters. If somebody else takes it as slander, you can say, hey, sorry, I was joking. And that changes it. Doesn't it? Well, it should, unless somebody throws a spear at you. What?
The spear?
If you pick it up. That's their problem. Yeah. That's their problem. If you what?
Pick it up and stab it. That's yourself.
You stab yourself? That's your problem. If somebody throws a spear at me, that's their problem. Remember that story of the Buddha and Ananda walking through this town where this guy lived outside the town and he was a disciple of another teacher? Remember that one?
Yeah.
Some say no, some say yeah, okay. So as they're walking through, this guy who lived outside of town, he told everybody in town that this guy that was coming in pretending to go on alms round was actually a fake, and he just came to case their places so he could rob them later. And he hired a bunch of the kids to throw stones at them and call them names and insult them. So the Buddha and Ananda and a few other monks are walking through the town and people are slamming their doors and kids are throwing stones at them. And Ananda says, Lord Buddha, they don't seem to like us here. And the Buddha says, oh, so it seems, Ananda, yes. And Ananda says, Lord Buddha, maybe we should go somewhere else. And the Buddha says, oh, very good, Ananda, very good. But Ananda, if we go somewhere else and they do the same thing, what should we do then? Well, Lord Buddha, we should go somewhere else. But Ananda, three times. The third time, Ananda says, thank you, Lord Buddha. If somebody throws a spear at you, that's their problem. If you pick it up and stab yourself, that's your problem. If your energy is of kindness, the spear is only going to turn to a flower when it comes near you. You can see their suffering. Well, look who's joining us. So, cease to do evil, learn to do good. That was the last one. The opposite of slander due to the aspiration to promote concord. Number one. the opposite of harsh speech, that is affection, not criticizing. The opposite of chatter, to speak Dharma, that's idle talk. Just go on.
So what is the opposite of chatter? Silence?
Of what? Chatter?
It's the opposite of chatter, silence.
Yeah, it's it, and the Buddha said speak Dharma, speak truth, or practice the noble silence. Do you want a chair, John?
No, she's allergic to cats.
Oh, well then we'll
I'm
put the cat
take
out.
The cat out.
The cat goes.
Right, get the cat. Goes.
I'm fine. No, this door, Don.
Well.
Too late. Right by Toby.
Just don't shake the cat.
Wow, well, allergic to cats, huh? That wouldn't be fun, would it? So many people have cats, don't
they're
they?
They're everywhere. They're everywhere.
Yeah. And also, the fourth one is lying. You know, dishonesty. That makes sense, doesn't it? Mm-hmm. Right, speech.
They're always in not being present.
Aren't they? In fact, every one of the Eightfold Path. The difference between when you see something absolutely beautiful, like you walk out the door and there's incredible sunrise, and you just stop thinking about traffic, or and you go, oh, look, and you're open. Does that feel good? Does it? And thinking about whether you've seen a better sunrise or a worse one. Huh? Which one feels more present? Any of you ever been in a traffic accident? After the traffic accident, did you have this feeling of just gratitude for breathing, or...
I can't remember.
But just this sense of, well, I'm still here. Mm-hmm. Oh. See, that's like seeing being here for the first time, isn't it? It's like just opening to the moment and realizing it's a gift. Isn't it? Mm-hmm.
I never realized how much right speech, harmful speech applies to oneself. To,
doesn't it?
To the thinking mind, not necessarily to the voicing.
Absolutely. Oh, I should have. Oh, I didn't. Oh, I should have. Oh, I will.
Exactly.
Blah, blah, blah. Pick a pick a pick. Oh, you always say the wrong thing, don't you, Tesla? Why did you pretend to pick your nose one more time in the class? You've done that so many times. It's so boring. People know how to do that. You know? Blah, 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 blah. Or going over conversations. Any of you ever do that? Going over them again. Oh, and they said, and I said, and we did it.
Shoulda, woulda.
Hmm?
Shoulda, woulda. Should have done or shouldn't have. Should
have. Oh, yeah, should have, would have, could have. Exactly. And it's endless, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
It's anything except just being in the moment. It's all about right and wrong. How many times have I said this? If I'm right, what does that do for everybody else?
It ends in hell.
If I'm wrong, what does that do?
It puts you in hell.
Yeah. Wishing that I had been right. I'm in hell right away. Oh, I should have. When you look at everybody and you see that everybody is already on their path, and every path is personal, and there's not a right way. And fortunately, we're able to walk side by side with people for some period of time, and maybe not forever. That's not the point. To enjoy what we do have is the point. To be open to the moment. That's all we have anyway. Isn't it? Mm-hmm. So did I finish Red's speech today?
Mm-hmm. Nicely done.
So we can move on to right action. She's basically the five precepts. Right speech actually doesn't include lying, because that's right action. I slipped it in wrongly. I'm happy to tell you. I was incorrect. I'm very happy to tell you. So what are the five precepts? I undertake to train myself to refrain from killing and harming. Number one. Isn't it? Mm-hmm. Sometimes it's written to refrain from killing and harming all breathing beings. How are you going to do that? Did you ever step on an ant when you were walking on a sidewalk?
You'd have to cut down the definition of breathing.
It's about intention.
He said you can cut down the definition of breathing. It's only if you're harming somebody who's breathing that it's a problem. So he said you could cut down the definition of breathing.
A tree breathes.
Yeah, Toby said it's problem. Intention.
Huh?
Toby said it's intention.
Intention?
I think it's your intent, like it's what your motivation is, that I think.
Yeah, that's was my final decision too. And because when I was in Thailand, when I was being a bald-headed, barefoot nun, walking around in my white robes, I decided one day to see if it was possible to live without killing or harming. And I practiced for like over a week. And I never knew whether there would be a mosquito on the water when I threw a pail down the toilet hole. Because there was no lights in the little place I stayed in. You couldn't see. I never knew if I moved my foot to not step on this ant, I stepped on that one. Let alone all the invisible life forms.
So even every time you take medicine, it kills bugs and bacteria in your own systems. And
yeah.
Every time you change your diet or you change your
life. Or drink a cup of hot tea, how many little microbes get done in?
Yeah. Or even every time you breathe in.
Yeah. So the intention is really what it's pointing at.
And you could expand it too, like what is breathing? Like would a mountain be breathing only just really, really, really slowly? Is the earth breathing whenever we strip mine something or don't recycle well or eat more than we need? It expands to be a really big question.
It is a big question. So that's why there's no answer to that question, except for the motive.
Yeah.
It's who is to do acting that matters, not the action. The action matters, but it's dependent on the motive. Mm-hmm. Exactly.
And isn't that for every one of those statements in the understandings? It's the motive.
In the so-called first one, right understanding, hearing from others and then realizing for oneself, mm-hmm. isn't necessarily about motive, but you could say it is, because again, all beings desire pleasure. The greatest pleasure is altruism. Mm-hmm. We know that. We know it's more fun to hold the door for somebody with their hands full of groceries than to let it slam in their face. Don't we know that?
Mm-hmm.
We all know that. Oh, wait, let me hold that for you. Oh, thank you. Oh, no, please, no problem. I'm happy to do it. Because I am. Thanks for giving me the option. Mm-hmm. Is that true? Is that true in your life?
Mm-hmm.
Altruism is more fun. And we have an automatic response to that. We stop ourselves when some neurotic pattern interferes. Don't we?
Yeah, I was going to say, because sometimes you can kind of feel when the motive is mixed, when you're rushing somewhere and then you see that holding the door for somebody would be beneficial, but that rushing thing is still operating too.
Yeah. It would depend why you're rushing. Wouldn't it?
Yeah.
To be the first in line at the sale at Sears?
To get out the door first because there's a fire. Yeah.
But don't we love seeing stories about heroes on the news?
Mm-hmm.
Doesn't that just make us happy?
Mm-hmm.
We did.
Would altruism be... is when you see through causing pain and then avoid it or make the conscious effort not to do it. See yourself about to step on an ant and then say, no, I'm not going to do that.
I mean, that's sort of cease to do evil, which is sponsored by altruism. But altruism is when you actually pay attention to the fact that you prefer to do good. When we accept the fact that we don't want to step on the ant.
Okay.
When that becomes a clear understanding of ourselves.
So when you want, then you start wanting to do it. You start wanting
you
not to do it.
You already want to do it. You recognize that you want to do it. Okay. You don't stop yourself from giving to yourself what is your greatest pleasure. You don't disempower yourself, which is what you do when you doubt, isn't it?
You disempower yourself?
Mm-hmm. Oh, I should have, or I might have, or they should have, or I didn't. That's not saying whatever. And here we are, and it's the next moment, and the next chord is being played and the dance is carrying on. Mm-hmm. It's as if you could actually change the past. What a concept! Can you? Can you change the past?
No.
You can change the perception of the past. You can change your interpretation of
like
the past.
Like that. But you can't change the past because it is only exists depending on my perception, which depended on the mind state that was there, which depended on the self-illusion. The different self in every moment. The self that says, oh, I don't want to do that again. And the self that says, I think I'll do it one more time. They're all so these all these different selves. One minute you're happy with something, one minute you're sad. One minute you're bored, one minute you're excited. Is this true? Well, not even a minute. That's not true. Millisecond. Millisecond.
So what exactly is happening then? Is this like some universal consciousness of altruism that is gradually refining itself like a Big Bang theory?
In some ways, that is the Buddhist explanation. All beings desire pleasure. The greatest pleasure is altruism. In some ways, that, according to the Buddha, is the natural state of consciousness and the non-separateness of all existence, the transcending of subject-object. And then coming back into name and form, but knowing the totality. Isn't that interesting?
Over and over and over. Endlessly, over and over and over.
And you just have to do it once for real. And then you never... And that's never gone. And then usually you need, you know, at least 4 experiences of it before it's fully developed. So you can meet people who are teachers who have faults, but they still have something that they can offer you. So there's no such thing as like, you know, well, they shouldn't have said that, or they should. Oh, that's their learning. Oh, I'm glad they said that. And in that way, you can say that everybody is your teacher. Because all beings have that altruism in their heart. Can't you? When we punish ourselves, isn't that because we should be better? Isn't that our altruism? I want to be happy, therefore I shouldn't have said that. To abstain from killing and harming, to abstain from lying, or false speech, whatever you want to call it. To abstain from taking what is not freely given. Isn't that lovely? Mm-hmm. I love that one. You can feel when somebody's giving you something but they don't want to. Can't you? You could take it then say, okay, I have a gift for you and give it back. You'd really enjoy that. And they would too. From sex that is immoral sex, like with children or with people who are already committed to a relationship, or, you know, violence or etc. So those are basically the right action. They have to do, especially abstain from killing and harming, that has to do with hatred, doesn't it? Mm-hmm. To abstain from lying, that has to do with delusion, doesn't it? Mm. And to abstain from what is not freely given, that has to do with greed. And to abstain from immoral sex, that has to do with self-grasping. I want that pleasure. You are going to give it to me. Do you have any questions, answers, comments, or complaints yet?
I bet you got one for me here. On your abstain from taking something that isn't freely given, would it be the same thing to abstain from not taking something that's freely given?
They're not talking so much about accepting. If you don't want something, there's no need to take it. If you want to take it because you know the other person wants to give it and you want to satisfy them, that's still taking it because you want them to be happy. If you don't take something because you know the other person doesn't really want to give it, then that wouldn't be a problem either. You can't make it like black and white. It has to be your heart to know when there's something is freely given. If you really realize that somebody really needs to give that to you, and that, or that they think they should give it to you, there's a difference between those two, isn't there?
Okay, if someone's giving something to you because they want to give it to you, but you're caught up in, as a receiver, you're caught up in, I don't want to be obligated.
That's not accepting them, they're freely giving it. So that's breaking the precept. You're not obligated if it's given freely. We're not obligated if something is given freely. How come you're breathing in? What are you breathing in? Oxygen, Cecily. Tell me that.
Oxygen.
Yeah. And how can you breathe in oxygen? Well, because the plants give it out, Cecily, freely. Is that true?
Yeah.
You don't even have to think about that, do you?
Yeah.
It's just a flow. Everything is continuously this flow of energy. And feeling like you shouldn't take it is like stopping the flow.
Yeah.
It's holding yourself separate.
As the receiver, yeah.
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 That's not freedom, is it?
No.
That's like a little prison cell. I shouldn't take it.
Yeah, okay. So you should abstain from that. That's what I...
Abstain from taking that which is not freely given. If it's freely given, you shouldn't abstain. If it's not freely given,
you
do abstain.
But if it's freely given and you don't take it, if you freely give me something and I say no.
Yeah, then you've freely given me no. So I accept that. Wasn't that nasty of me?
Yeah. Yeah, you did a really good job with that one.
Thank you.
I know you're happy.
Cecily, so you're saying if I give you something and there's no conditions, because it's freely given, so there's no conditions attached, and those conditions include, I don't care if you take it, that's okay too.
Yeah, absolutely.
There's no conditions attached.
That's right.
So if you say no, I go, okay, all right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Did you hear, did you like the way he said it better?
Yeah, it still comes back, yeah. I understand it a little bit clearer the way Don said it. Because we worked on it, so.
It's the obligation thing that's interesting,
yeah.
Isn't it? Mm-hmm. It's the obligation.
Yeah. You,
thinking that you owe something, or that they're going to want something,
yeah.
Or... that you shouldn't have taken from them without giving something back,
yeah.
Or
that there's always some hidden condition that's going to come up and bite you in the ass somewhere.
Yeah, and it's always in your own mind.
Yes, it is.
And it's always in your own mind, the one that second guesses everything.
Yeah.
Well, there's also an aspect of not really thinking you're good enough to receive.
Yeah, it's the same.
Mm-hmm.
It's exactly the same.
Mm-hmm.
Go back and criticize and.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Even if it's really good,
you can feel that slight unease.
Yeah.
No, I'm okay to give, but you give to me.
To receive, yeah, because then I got to make things fair.
It makes that freely saying no thing harder.
Huh?
It makes that freely saying no thing a lot trickier. Like, am I really freely saying no?
Why not?
No. Or am I saying no because...
Why do you have to even know the answer to that? Why don't you just trust the moment? Why do you have to have a right answer is what I'm asking all of you.
Yeah.
Why do you have to have a right answer? Why do you have to have a set of rules to live by? That's you putting yourself in prison. That's not you following your heart, which is for altruism.
Mm-hmm.
We all prefer kindness. We all prefer kindness. But we don't always know that we should give it to ourselves, too.
The one thing I'm finding with all of these is that it's much easier for me to understand it in terms of something outer. But in terms of the inner world, it's... murky, it's slippery, it's like
isn't
new
that
kind of experience.
Like isn't that wonderful that you can see it that
yeah,
way?
Yeah.
Isn't that wonderful and that you can actually say it in front of other people?
Yeah.
Isn't that beautiful? That's huge for you, isn't it?
When Bob was talking, the image that came up was this penis in my mouth and I went, what? Like, you know, what the fuck is that about? But it's about something somewhere.
Yeah.
That occurred that I allow to be kind of like this automatic first response.
Yeah, exactly. And it isn't actually occurring now.
No.
But the pattern has been established.
Yeah.
So then, you know, we were camping in Norway. God, I'm so repetitive. You don't know why you like, guys invite me back.
I've never heard the Norway story, sorry.
No, we were camping in Norway and Namgyal Rinpoche disappeared for about 3.5 hours one afternoon. He was giving a class later, right after the lunch, he disappeared. Well, we were eating lunch and he disappeared because he ate his lunch separate from us, eh? And he disappeared. And 3.5 hours later, just before the 4 o'clock class, he reappears with his beaming smile on his face. He sits down, and instead of going namo tassa, he goes, well, you see that waterfall up there? And he points to, like, you know, up this almost mountain, huge hill. You wonder where I was. I just climbed up there and I sat by the waterfall for about 3/4 of an hour and watched it. And then I went and I moved 3 rocks and the waterfall changed its direction. Did you notice? Wasn't that just like him? What more do you need to know? Change the flow of the waterfall. You do it by seeing it, examining it, and deciding whether you want to keep doing it. And it takes maybe one rock, maybe two rocks, maybe three rocks, maybe 1,000 mm-hmm. rocks. It doesn't matter. It's always the first time. That's huge, isn't it? If it's always the first time. Oh, it's my first time of seeing this. Oh, I think I'll see whether I can start a new flow. Mm. Why? Because there is not one of the 50 mind states that is not valuable. It just depends on whether they're just taking over your life or you're the one that's directing them. There is not greed, hatred, delusion, pride, jealousy, all of them. They're useful. It depends on how you're using them. Or whether they're just following a pattern based on some trauma. Mm-hmm. I was the third child.
Me too.
Oh, God. Me too. My old, oh, my God.
You know what I'm talking about.
I was the
my oldest.
I wanted to be the third.
Sorry. Does that count? No. Really, I have no idea what you're talking about.
And first, and I got criticized all the time. Oh, I didn't do anything right.
Oh, well, I'm not interested either. And the third child, the first child was 4 years old. And the second child was a year and a half younger than her. And then I was born. And the second child had was supposed to die all her life. Are you ready? Are you crying yet? Do you feel sympathy for me?
No.
It's starting cold. Yeah, quit.
He was adopted.
Yeah, I was adopted.
Oh, God,
I don't even know what. I think the seventh.
Just be grateful you weren't the fourth.
Like, so isn't it amazing how many stories we can come up with? And some of them are very strong and they have very emotional pattern behind them. You know? Can you imagine having a sister 2.5 years older than you who was never supposed to walk, never supposed to live, always supposed to die? And then when you're going to school, she insists on going to school. And she's the one grade behind you, ahead of you, because she had to miss a year because her heart condition was so bad. She was blue all the time. Then the next year she's going to school and we wait until we're out of sight of the house windows. And then she says, I'll race you to the bus. And you know, I was very ticklish. That if you don't run as fast as you can, she's going to trip you and start tickling you. And if you do run as fast as you can, she could have a heart attack. Flip a fucking coin. We could go on and on. Everybody has something that is exactly what is going to make them pay attention to what they don't want to pay attention to. What did I have to pay attention to? Can't do anything about an older sister like that. So I stopped being ticklish. One day she was tickling me and I just suddenly decided not to feel it, and I'm just lying there and she keeps tickling me, and then she stops and she says, oh bugger, and gets up and walks away. Now she had to find something else. Because that's what we can do. We can always find something else. If we're willing. I don't want to try to be dramatic. I'm just saying, yes, that's true. Yes, that's true. Yes, that's true. Yes, that's true. And? What are your choices now? Do you want that pattern to run you? Or do you want to say, wait a minute, I don't want to go here. And whether you're successful the first time or the second time or the third time has nothing to do with it. It's a matter of your aspiration. I don't want to do that. I don't want to let fear make me try to be safe. I would like to be open and dance. Because you know you would. Is that true? We all prefer to dance. Don't we?
Leonard Cohen's way through my mind.
Which one?
Dance me to the ends of love.
Dance of love.
Is that good? Mm. Quarter to nine.
Overtime.
Overtime.
You should have signed that union contract. I told you. I told you.
So you notice this beautiful gold light in your hearts. It spreads through your body. Tingles up your spine and down your spine and down your leg bones and out your head bone and down your arm bones. In front, behind, right, left, four quarters. Just fills this room, this gold light just sparkling in this room. Fills the house, fills the neighborhood. Just goes out through all of Edmonton, through all of Alberta, through all of this North America. Anybody you want to pray for. Just imagine them being washed, including you, with this beautiful cold light. And you think whatever wholesomeness has been gathered by our coming together, we share it with all beings, so there is less suffering. Whatever wholesomeness has been gathered by our coming together, we share it with all beings, so there is less suffering. Whatever wholesomeness has been gathered by our coming together, we share it with all beings, so there is less suffering. So thank you for your great compassion. Thank you. And for listening to my same stories over and over.
It's always the first time.
Thank you. I needed that.